I call this meeting of the Committee on Housing, Finance, and Policy to order. Let it be known that we have quorum. Welcome, members to committee. We have a very busy day ahead of us, hearing some things around housing today. So, Representative Scraba, keeping me on my toes. But yeah, we're going to have a good, really good hearing today. But first things first, if we could do, if someone has reviewed the minutes, I'll look for a motion to approve the minutes. Representative Scraba has moved the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. All right, we'll move into our first bill on the agenda, House File 2013. Representative Nash, would you like to move your bill?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 2013 to come before the committee with a referral to government operations and elections, I believe. And, Mr. Chair, if you would, I have a DE3 to put the bill in the shape that I would like.
Please proceed with your amendment.
So the amendment is really very much the same, but it's also reflects some work that has been done with municipal groups around the state to get them to where they're a little more comfortable with it, and that's largely reflected in lines 1.11 moving forward. And that was in negotiations with the League of Minnesota Cities to get them closer to a point where they're comfortable with the bill. But to the bill, I guess we need to engross the amendment, Mr. Chair. We need to vote on the adoption of the amendment.
Yeah, I was making sure you were sorry. So, Representative Nash moves the DE3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Two-year bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the House File 2013 as amended is a bill that would largely begin to dial down some of the aesthetic mandates, as they are called pejoratively. And the aesthetic mandate language that exists today enables cities to put things on that are realistically over and above building code. So, for example, it could be a brick exterior, it could be a stone exterior, it could be the requisite for cedar siding, it could be a certain type of shingle, it could be a color of a shingle, it could be a third car garage, it could be shutters, it could be any number of things, a tree in the yard, more than one tree in the yard. And the goal of the aesthetic mandate language as exists today is realistically to make make cities pretty. And I will tell you, as somebody who has watched this housing issue for many, many years, I think it goes back to when Representative Howard was staff here. So it's been a couple of years. Let that sink in. What we're looking at, we're undersupplied by 106,000 or more housing units. And you've heard me share this story, so I'll be brief with it. As the father of six kids, every parent wants their kid to live in and around or near where they live. Today, my 28-year-old son, my 24-year-old son could not afford to live in and around my wife and I in Waconia because the houses are too expensive and we're not building starter homes. And that's not an official term, but it's an unofficially observed official term. A starter home is effectively a home that is an easy barrier of entry for people to get into. And I have some starter homes in my district, and I've talked about them before. In the city of Mayer, there's a large conglomeration of those types of homes. And here's what's different than what you see in other parts of the district or other parts of the state. There are smaller homes on smaller lots. They have vinyl siding. They don't have shutters. They don't have a requisite for trees. They don't have stone exteriors. All of those things, Mr. Chair and members, are, as I call them, the Chinese menu of options for the home. It says that if Representative Dotseth wants to live in a home that has stone exterior, that's his choice. Or if Representative Rehrauer would like to have cedar siding, that's Representative Rehrauer's choice, not prescriptive. And what we've learned from a study, I believe it was a number of years ago, a couple of years ago, from the National Association of Realtors, is that for every $1,000 you add to the price of a home, could be in a stone exterior or brick facade or cedar siding or whatever, that $1,000 increase is pricing 4,000 people out of the potential pool of market buyers. So if you add 2,000, it's 8,000 people you're suppressing. What that does, just because it's pretty, not because it is something that is integral to the structure of the house, like Representative Mecklen would build, and he can tell you very clearly that a brick facade does nothing to the structural integrity of the home. That's the gist of the bill, is to remove those impediments so that we can make housing more affordable for people like my son David, who's in the Navy. And I've shared this story with you before, but it's always a good story, so I'm going to share it again. My son David is in the Navy. And David, when he was deployed in Japan, then went somewhere that he can't tell me where it was, and they did things that involved the exchange of hostilities. But he was looking up at the stars one night and realized, as every good sailor can, that if they find the North Star, they can navigate their way home. Building homes is a North Star issue. We have to be able to make it so that more people can find their way home, like my son David. It's just that simple. So as we begin to remove impediments to the purchase of a home, the better off we're going to be. So if we can build more starter homes like we have in the city of Mayer or in other places around the state, the better off we're going to be, and we're going to be able to chip away at that 106,000 unit undersupply. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Is there any questions to start before we go into testifiers? All right, we'll go on the test first. First on the list will be Mark Foster. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Igoe and committee members. My name is Mark Foster, and I am the Vice President of Legislative and Political Affairs with Housing First Minnesota. I should just say ditto, because I think he stole a lot of my testimony. But we are a trade association of nearly 1,000 members of the home building industry that have one goal in mind, advancing home ownership opportunities for all Minnesotans. Thanks for the opportunity to support Representative Nash's bill before you as part of the larger Yes to Homes agenda, and thank you to Representative Nash for carrying this language or similar language for many years, and thank you to his growing list of co-authors on this bill as well. So as we've mentioned to the committee before, our concerns about the future of home ownership in Minnesota continue to grow. Like Representative Nash said, you know, statewide we're 100,000 units short, and Minnesota's housing market is far from healthy at this moment. So where does this bill come in? And yes, why should you all as the state legislature care? Well, a well-known exclusionary zoning tactic, aesthetic mandates, take many forms, including stone or brick facade requirements, high-end architectural design elements, oversized design elements, front porches, bans on vinyl siding, and more. By another name, it was just mentioned in the other body, this is economic redlining. On a typical new home, these mandates can exceed $20,000 per house. And as a reminder to the committee, that $20,000 in increased costs equates to approximately 50,000 Minnesota households that can no longer afford that mortgage. Let me be clear. These aesthetic mandates have nothing to do with the safety, durability, or energy efficiency of homes. Those items are covered by the state's building and energy codes, which are currently under discussion at the Department of Labor and Industry as we speak, and we're a member of those groups. Today in Minnesota, we build the safest, durable, and energy efficient homes in the country, and this bill changes none of that. When discussing one type of aesthetic mandates, Emily Hamilton of the Mercatus Center at George Mason University says it best, quote, "Vinyl siding bans are one of the clearest ways that land use regulations have no purpose other than excluding households that are priced out when more expensive materials are required," end quote. In fact, when similar language was proposed years ago, a special interest group claimed the bill would, quote, "decrease public safety and lead to a lower quality of life," end quote. These are other words in a shameful pattern. Home ownership is the desire of all Minnesotans. Zoning and housing aesthetics should not be used as a tool of exclusion. This bill ends, as amended, seeks to end these exclusionary policies and restore reasonable homeowner choice for home buyers. Similar legislation has been signed into law across the country, including in Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Tennessee, Iowa, and North Carolina. The home building industry is attempting to meet consumers where they are. In many instances, they continue to call for greater density, smaller homes on smaller lots, less demand for garage space. While not all consumers are asking for these items, there is a growing segment of first-time buyers, single people, and downsizers that are. We are committed to providing consumers with more choice. There's a massive market for starter homes, modest homes with functional space on small lots. Homeowners know if they want more design elements, and homeowners know whether or not they need upgraded exteriors for their homes. This bill returns these decisions back to consumers. This bill is the ultimate form of local control, property owners themselves. Home ownership in a safe, durable home was a goal for generations. Unfortunately, we lost our way on that simple foundational premise. So in 2025, we find ourselves again in this position where recommitting to building starter homes can help our communities flourish and meet the demand for housing. This language before you is a small but important piece of the puzzle, and for the sake of the next generation of home buyers, we need your help in removing these exclusionary roadblocks, and thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Foster. Is there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Foster, I have a question. And with your builder members, do you see any, like, split-level homes being built nowadays that the basement may be unfinished, top is finished, 2-3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms? Do you see any of that?
Mr. Foster.
Yes. Wish we could probably see more of that type of product. The smaller homes that I think you're mentioning, we don't have as many as we'd like.
Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What about like the kind of the old, I don't know, 60s or 70s, like the 24, 28 by 36 type, maybe a full basement slab on grade? Do you see a lot of those type of developments?
Mr. Foster.
Thank you, Representative, for the question. You know, I think the slab on grade, we don't have quite as many of those as we'd like. Again, we have a lot of basements, unfinished and finished here, for good reason with some of those requirements, you know, kind of tornadoes and the like. But yeah, the slab on grade would allow for some cost savings for sure.
Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's my observation that we don't have a lot of, like, the smaller homes. I don't see them around my, you know, district very much, except the older ones. And I think we've all been talking about this for several years. Like, we need to get back to that because of the interest rates right now, but also just the pricing of everything. And it seems to me that there's been many cases, and we've had these conversations, of municipalities, like, prohibiting a developer from doing a 55-foot lot because they wanted a 75-foot lot, which then increases the price of every home exponentially. And the park, you know, municipal parks are within the neighborhood, all this stuff, and if we're going to be seriously considering what it's going to take to make more housing, affordable housing, these things need to be brought to center. But thank you, Mr. Foster.
Next on the list will be Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I'm just going to build on the other question. The question was, are you finding split-level homes that with unfinished basements, and you said you're not seeing as many as you'd hoped or as many. Is that a result of builders not building them that way, or is that a result of homeowners wanting to have a complete house when they move in?
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that might be a question better suited for a later bill. We're dealing with aesthetics, which really deals with the exterior of the house, not the construct of it, whether it's a split level or it's a ranch or whatever. But the aesthetic mandate bill that we have before us, House File 2013, would deal with largely the exterior accoutrements of that house.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. But I thought the purpose of this bill is to try to create more or cheaper homes for people, which that would be another way for people to make the home considerably cheaper at the time when they move in. So that's why I was just building on that as far as are people choosing to make the homes, you know, more expensive regardless.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson. I'd say that once again, focusing on the language of the bill, and I'm not being evasive, that is coming in a future bill that you can ask that question of, whether it's split level or it's a house like my own, which is I think 4,000 some odd square feet. We're dealing on this bill only with what's on the outside of the house, or whether it's a shingle or it's a third car garage, or if it's a brick facade or a stone facade or cedar siding or other. That's what's in this bill before us.
Thank you, Chair.
Next on the list will be Representative Rivera.
Just to follow up on that question, thank you, Chair. So this bill would make it so that those aesthetic conditions aren't required. However, could the homeowner still choose, if they had a builder they were working with, to have those?
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raderauer, yes. It's. I think I've used this example before, and I may have just used it, but I've presented this so many times I sometimes forget. It's a lot like when you go to a Chinese restaurant, and you may order your entree, which would be the house, but then you say, you know what, I would like crab rangoon with that, or I might like a side of fried rice. That is then your complete opportunity to say, I would like to add that to my order. So if you build a basic starter home, but you also like the idea of a brick exterior, then you can do that, and it becomes voluntary as opposed to prescriptive.
Any follow-up? All right, seeing no further testimony, we'll move on to our next member. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Foster. I think next on the list will be Jill Huttmacher. Welcome, committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Thank you, Chair Igo, Lead Howard, and members. My name is Jill Huttmacher. I am the Director of Community Development for the City of Eagan. And I am testifying here today on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and the Municipal League Municipal Legislative Commission, which together represent cities around the state, including the City of Eagan. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 2013, as amended by the DE3 Amendment. We want to thank Representative Nash for the amendment to significantly limit the scope of the bill to residential developments with four units or less, and to allow for a city to require an egress point on the street-facing side of the structure. However, we still have some concerns with how terms in this bill could be interpreted. The bill contains broad language limiting cities from setting requirements related to architectural elements, building egress, or light access requirements. The term architectural elements, for example, could be broadly interpreted and could invite litigation for cities. Currently, the City of Eagan places no zoning restrictions on the design of single-family homes, including all of the architectural elements listed by Representative Nash. The city, however, does require visual relief on long facades of multifamily buildings. Visual relief can be as simple as a change in building materials to break up that facade. The City of Eagan strives to create environments that feel safe and welcoming to pedestrians, consistent with our responsibility to ensure the health, safety, and welfare of residents. Thank you, Chair Igo, and members, for your time today. To comment on the bill, our city organizations look forward to continuing to work with Representative Nash and others on this legislation.
Is there any members that wish to ask any questions? Thank you, Ms. Huttmacher. Is there any members from the public that wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Any further discussion on House File 2013? Lead Howard.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and thank you, Representative Nash. I do think I've been hearing that North Star story ever since I've been a staff person in the legislature, so I appreciate that call out.
Yeah. It's a very good story.
So thank you for your work on this over a number of years in this issue of helping us build more starter homes and create more. What I really appreciate your presentation is how we're centering Minnesotans in this discussion. It's people that are seeking to buy a home that should have the power to build the kind of home that they want to build and the community where they want to thrive. And I also want to thank you for your continued work as Ms. Huttmacher mentioned, significantly limit the scope of this bill. The exemption, I also want to call it the exemption for historic districts as well. Just your continued work to narrow really where we want this focus to be. And so just appreciate your work on this bill. It's a critical piece of our overall work to make it more affordable to build homes. So thank you.
Thank you. Looks like we have one more question from Representative Scraba.
I apologize, but Lead Howard, you brought something up, and last couple of weeks I've been door knocking in the Roseville Shoreview area, and one of my comments, looking at all these different houses, how different, everything is different. I mean, they built when there were no rules, and they could do whatever they wanted, and how unique each one was different. I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. You know, like some people would have squares and round and whatever. It was just everyone was eclectic. And some of these cul-de-sacs, they weren't the same house. You know, you don't walk into someone else's house. You walk into yours because yours is yours. You know, and so I applaud trying to go back the way we were. You know, that, I think that's what this is almost. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. With seeing no further discussion, to your bill, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would take a moment to really disagree with the parting statement of the last testifier saying that there's a goal to create safety. This has nothing to do with safety. The aesthetics of a house have nothing to do with safety. It has everything to do with being able to afford to buy a home. And I'll pick up after what Representative Scraba just said. In the city of Waconia, in the post-World War II era, there's a large number of homes that were built with one specific goal in mind, which was to put people in houses. This is where we find ourselves today. We need to put people in houses that they can begin to invest themselves into their community. Their community will invest in them, and ultimately both sides win. It's been shown that children in a stable home have better test scores, that family can begin investing in places like the sports facility, in sports teams. Moms and dads become coaches. Kids get mentored, and they begin investing back in their community, and their community invests in them. You know, Mr. Chair, I'll share something that happened in state government finance this morning, and sadly, Representative Howard was a little absent, but he would have heard this. We heard a presentation from the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage today. And one of the things that they said that very, very clearly that their community of interest has, I think, 30% lower home ownership than everybody else in the state of Minnesota. And when asked, they said a lot of it has everything to do with supply. So if we can find a way to begin lowering the price of homes, and ultimately with another bill, maybe make the size of those homes smaller so they can also become more affordable, everybody's going to win. So let's think again back to the post-World War II Waconia, for just an example. The houses are very, very plain. And yet they have changed hands a number of times. And in changing hands, you begin building generational wealth for that next generation so that if somebody bought that early on and they age in there, they raise some kids, maybe they sell it to the kid or give it to the kid, or they sell and they begin to make the most out of that money that they have made as a result of owning their own home. That's the goal, members, is to make it so that people can own a little piece of Minnesota for themselves that they, Mr. Chair, in summation, can call their own personal North Star. And this is just one piece of many. I think that it's a very good bill, and I appreciate my members' support. I appreciate the authors I have. I think a huge portion of both sides of the aisle here in this committee are on this bill. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will renew my motion to refer House File 2013 as amended to the Government Operations and Elections Committee.
Representative Nash re-renews his motion. To refer House File 2013 to the Elections and Finance and Government Operations Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. And now we will, it's going to be my bill up next, so we'll hand off to Vice Chair Dotseff.
Welcome, House File 1987. I motion to refer to House File 1987 to Election and Finance Committee, Operations Committee. Representative Igel, would you like to move your A1 amendment?
Yeah, first I'll move, that is my motion, Mr. Chair, and yes, to start, I would like to move my author's amendment. The A1 amendment is just, it's actually work of a lot of collaboration members with multiple different groups around this issue. And we've been able to come together and really kind of clean the bill up. The I can kind of do a brief walkthrough. What this will be doing is deleting sections 2 and sections 3 of House File 1987 with minor changes to ADU language following that. And then finally at the end, there'll be a small change in line 4, 3, and 4-4 of the bill around some density requirements. So overall, just very slight changes to the bill. But yes, if we adopt that, then I'll go into the more language of the bill itself.
Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries. To the motion carries. First time with the gavel. Thank you. The A2 amendment, Representative Myers.
Chair Dotseth, if we could go over the bill itself, I'll give it a Lead Howard and I'll give it a little bit of a discussion, then we'll go into amendments if that's okay.
We'll move to the bill.
So House File 1987, as amended, is labeled and is duly labeled as the Minnesota Starter Home Act, and it's going to accomplish just that. The bill in front of us today is the work of a lot of people, and a lot of people of both sides of the aisle. I'm very proud to have Lead Howard sitting next to me here today to help present this bill because it really shows true bipartisan nature of this chamber and how we are working together, not only just in our own communities but across the state to bring as many people to the table as possible to solve the problem that is housing in the state of Minnesota. And this is just the first step of many bills that will be coming. You know, it's important before I even get into the bill that we mention the facts. The median age of buying your first home in the state of Minnesota is now 38 years old. Your average mortgage is over $2,500 a month, and we are over 100,000 housing units down. There's no one that can sanely say we don't have a problem here in this state, and it's time for us to take steps at getting to that and fixing that. The prior bill, we heard great discussion around just one small part that we can bring down the cost of housing, and that's aesthetic mandates. And Representative Nash brought up a point that I love talking about when we talk about the Starter Home Act, because this is nothing new that we have in front of us today. The bill is getting at how we used to do things when we got things done and people got after what the American dream is all about. Investing in a home, raising a family, supporting your community, building generational wealth, and leaving this place better than you had it. You can't do that without a home. And that's what we're trying to accomplish with the Starter Home Act here today. So inside the Starter Home Act, I want to make sure I go through the bill just briefly so that members understand what's all in it. As you'll see with the author's amendment, there's been quite a bit of language removed from it, so we'll be starting in Section 4. Section 4 is mainly just definitions, making sure that we lay out exactly what every different topic is that we're talking about in the bill. Subdivision 2 gets into the residential housing types that are going to be authorized. Again, this is getting at building these single-family dwellings, duplexes, and ADUs and townhouses inside our new lots. Subdivision 3 goes into the required standards. This is, if you want to call it, the more of the meat of the bill that gets into getting at making sure that cities can't zone out smaller lot sizes. And I think it's really important to say that these smaller lot sizes, if you look in your packet, and I'm sure some of the testifiers are going to talk about it, you'll see pictures of what smaller homes look like on smaller lots. They're nothing to be scared of. In fact, they're a solution to one of the problems that we have. Again, getting at the fact that we don't have enough homes. And these homes can look really great and be beautiful additions to our communities and bring many different types of people to our communities, from younger generations to older generations. So that's going to be subdivision 3. And then subdivision 4 is getting into the administrative approvals on making sure that cities can adopt and control all these new changes that will be coming with it. So before I get into any more statements on the bill, I want to make sure I give Lead Howard opportunity to catch maybe anything I missed there, and then we'll continue.
Thank you, Chair Igoe and members of the committee. I'm very proud to be presenting this bill alongside Chair Igoe. It really doesn't cut one way if you're in a blue district or red district, if you're in greater Minnesota, if you're in an urban district. Everybody deserves the same opportunity to find a home that they can afford in a community where they want to live. And that's what the Minnesota Starter Home Act is all about. I'll just offer a few broad comments before we hear testimony, and just a few ground setting pieces, and Chair Igoe essentially mentioned this. One is that the status quo isn't working. We currently are not building enough homes that Minnesotans can afford. Another statistic is that in every county in this state, the median income is not enough to afford the median priced home. So this gets at what Representative Nash is saying. We have a generation of Minnesotans that can't afford to buy a home in the community where they grew up. That should concern all of us. Second point, things are getting worse. In 2018, Governor Dayton had an affordable housing task force, and at that time they estimated we had a 50,000 unit gap in terms of housing supply. That is now doubled in 2024 or 2025. And then the third thing I wanted to do is recognize that all across the state, we have cities that are doing incredible work that want to see more housing brought to their communities. And we're grateful for the collaboration and conversation we've had with cities since last year to further refine this proposal. And a few of the pieces that are different based on that good dialogue is that these bills in totality have a more targeted approach. So here you see a Starter Home Act that's more targeted specifically at homes to own, duplexes, townhomes, the like. Second, we're treating infill neighborhoods a little differently than where there's opportunities to redevelop or in greenfield development, which makes sense. Those carry with it a different sort of set of issues we should look at. Third, and this is perhaps more importantly, overlaying this, one of the main concerns we heard from cities last year is that we don't want to mandate a level of housing development that the public infrastructure does not support. And we agree with that. And that is why that protection for cities in this bill, along with cities' ability to prevent kind of housing development in environmental or floodplains, historical areas where there's well and septic, we've put those protections in place so that we're focusing our efforts to build homes where it makes the most sense. Still, despite a lot of cities that are doing good work in this arena, we just have to acknowledge the fact that no single city can solve our housing shortage on its own. This is a statewide problem that merits a statewide solution, which is why this bill is so important. And the last thing I want to do is thank the broad coalition of folks that have brought this bill forward. We'll hear a lot of that testimony today and in our packets. It's pretty noteworthy when you have this conglomeration of groups coming to the legislature telling us to take action, from labor to business to housing developers to affordable housing advocates to faith-based leaders, and the list goes on. And this broad group of folks are essentially doing what Minnesotans are asking us to do and yelling from the rooftops, say yes to more homes. And that's what this bill does, and really look forward to the discussion today.
Until after the amendments, would that be acceptable? Thank you. Testifiers, I believe we've got a number of testifiers. Triangle, do you have anything else before we bring on the testifiers?
No, I think it's totally appropriate. We should move into testifiers here and start hearing from them, and there'll be plenty more comments to make, I'm sure.
Wonderful. We've got Michelle Benson, Director of Commerce and Utilities Policy, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members, and thank you, Representatives Igo and Howard. I am Michelle Benson, Director of Housing Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The chamber represents 6,300 members, including 5,000 businesses with fewer than 100 employees. We are in every corner of the state, and as a statewide entity, the chamber is committed to fostering economic growth and opportunity across Minnesota. A lack of workforce housing is one of the top concerns of our members, and on their behalf, I want to thank the authors of House File 1987 for bringing solutions. I look forward to hearing other solutions to Minnesota's housing shortage. The lack of workforce housing has both long-term and short-term impact on Minnesota's economy. Owning a home is widely acknowledged as a key to a stable retirement. The longer people have to wait to buy a home, the later they start to build equity that contributes to family stability and generational wealth. As you know, home ownership contributes to stable communities and, in the long term, We need economically stable families and stable communities. In addition to these long-term impacts, a lack of workforce housing has immediate and short-term statewide economic impact. The state is facing a workforce shortage, but it's not just about the availability of people ready to work. These workers need a place to live. Approximately 100,000 housing units are needed to meet current demand. If a worker can't find a home near their place of employment, it makes it harder for them to take the job. If a business cannot hire, the business cannot grow. Housing shortages contribute to slower economic growth. And as the price of starter home moves based on supply and demand, how will Minnesota meet that demand? How will we increase supply? How do we make it easier to build workforce housing in Minnesota? We believe the Minnesota Starter Home Act can be a step in the right direction. We understand that the changes proposed here raise a number of concerns. And as we've engaged with our local chambers, we've heard some of the concerns raised by impacted parties. Please keep listening to the people who are at the table. The only way to ensure effective solutions is to work together to lower the cost of starter homes. We appreciate the efforts of the authors and collaborators on this bill, Representatives Igo, Howard, Meeklin, Kraft, Rayrauer, Coulter, and many others. Your commitment to finding solutions is commendable. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and we look forward to working to solve Minnesota's housing problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Nick Erickson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nick Erickson. I'm Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. Our members are the builders, developers, remodelers, and skilled trade partners who build the communities and places that we all call home, and it is our mission of homeownership opportunities for all Minnesotans that brings us here today to support this bill. As you heard from our bill authors, our housing market is not working as it should, and it does not look like the other markets in the region. We're facing a 100,000 home shortage. We have the highest median new home price in the region. And our new home starts since 2021 in Minnesota are down 43%. And since 2005, household growth has been eclipsed by new home growth by 7.5 times. I'll say that again. Our new home price growth since 2005 has increased at a rate of 7.5 times faster than income growth in the state. Simply, we have a problem here, and it's on the cost side. And our biggest problem is that instead of the market providing zoning and land use as it should, planning and zoning has to be purchased from cities through the planned unit development variance. In this process, density is sometimes reduced, affordability is almost certainly always lost, and even then, when you can get a smaller home, it certainly is not available at a new starter home price. A large portion of the homes built by our members are done what we call off the menu. So channeling Representative Nash's menu analogy from earlier, you can't really walk into City Hall and say, this is what I want to build. Instead, you have to go through a privately negotiated process. And in this process, every meeting, phone call, email, and public hearing is a negotiation. And our members tell us that in this process, every time, home buyers lose out. Now, you might think that this process is voluntary, and here's what's interesting. In 2018, the Minnesota State Supreme Court said that when these supposed negotiations are actually a requirement because the developer faces the real possibility of a project denial if they fail to consent to any of the city's demands. This, frankly, isn't good government. It certainly isn't transparent, and it's the would-be homebuyers who are paying the price. Now, this bill alone won't solve our state's housing problems, but as Representative Howard discussed, there's many more bills coming. These are all a start, because if you don't get land use right, really nothing else matters. And because of our current process, starter homes are an endangered species in Minnesota, and you have the power to change that. It's a lot of data and facts, but I'll tell you really a personal story. 2008, my then girlfriend bought a home. It was, I think, as the realtors would call it, quaint. It was really small. It was 650 square feet. It had a one bedroom. We got engaged in that home. We took our daughter home from the hospital. We became a family in that home. Everyone should have that opportunity, and that's why we're here today. So just going to leave it with that, but just want to ask you one question. if you really believe that home ownership opportunities should be available to future generations, and I think you do. And that's why we're here and ask for you to vote for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Evan Vogel. Please step up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Igo and Representative Howard. This is a really important topic, and I appreciate that it's being heard in this committee today. And as I begin my testimony, I just want to assure all the representatives in the room that cities are a partner in this process and look forward to continuing to have a dialogue to make this as productive as possible. My name is Evan Vogel. I'm the city administrator for the city of Cambridge, Minnesota, as well as a board member for the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors. In both 2019 and 2024, the city of Cambridge commissioned housing studies to explore and determine the city's housing needs, and I don't think it would surprise anyone here that both reports showed the city had critical needs in housing, from multifamily to single-family detached housing. Following the study in 2019, Cambridge used public subsidy to attract and support significant investments in multifamily housing. In the 5 years between that study and 2024, the city added 600 apartment units. After the study in 2024, the city has explored options and partnered with developers where the city anticipates adding between 600 and 700 detached single-family houses between 2024 and 2028. In total, the city will be adding well over 1,200 units of housing in a 10-year span, and for perspective, that's an expected increase in residential units of 33% over a single decade. These changes came because local decision makers were thoughtful and diligent in collecting data, making educated decisions, listening to the community, and providing local solutions to local problems. This allows cities the ability to assess needs around parking, water, sewer, storm sewer, as well as the ability to listen to and respond directly to the needs of the community. The city has negotiated in good faith with developers time and time again, sometimes holding to certain standards that it believes are in the best interests of both its current and future residents, and sometimes the city compromises or changes its positions to accommodate or incentivize development. This bill removes local input entirely in favor of development interests. It makes the argument that simply building houses, increasing density by right, and removing practical city standards that we, as a state, will see an improvement in housing prices. Instead, this bill will likely lead to an increase in developer profits over public interest as density is increased with little regard for available infrastructure. It will lead to an increase in investor ownership of properties as investors buy older single-family homes to build new duplexes or quads on single-family lots, and will not improve affordability in any meaningful way until the supply of housing exceeds the demand for it, as this legislation contains no market restrictions that limit what a developer can sell that home for above the cost to build. I'm asking all members to oppose House File 1987, to oppose efforts to restrict local decision-making authority, and I am happy to respond to any questions if there are any. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair and members, I am still Jill Hutmacher. I am still here on behalf of the City of Eagan, the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and the Municipal Legislative Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1987. I would like to highlight a few key concerns that cities continue to have with the language of this bill, although they are not, my comments are not exhaustive. Although fully developed, the City of Eagan has added over 2,100 residential units in the last 10 years. Nearly 500 units are approved and awaiting construction, and additional 468 units are in the approval process. Unfortunately, at least two approved residential projects have recently delayed construction due to market conditions, interest rates, and construction costs. This demonstrates that Eagan zoning code is not restricting residential development. The housing market is governed by forces outside of the city's control. This bill takes away a fundamental city authority, zoning and land use, which impacts the ability of cities to plan and respond to local condition. It also takes away the ability of our city to welcome engagement through robust community input. After 26 years in local government, I am convinced that allowing residents to participate in the decision-making process builds trust in government and connection to communities. It can be messy, I agree, but we get through it. And just today, I was complimented by a resident about a particularly messy process last year that went from 100 people wearing identical shirts in a crowded, stuffy room to one person at the approval of a plan because people were satisfied, they'd been heard. Compromises were made. That process is part of what builds trust in government and connects people to their communities. I will make just a few other notes on provisions in the bills. In Eagan, 78% of workers use private vehicles to commute to work. Only 2.6% use public transit, and 2% walk or bicycle. Parking spaces for private automobiles are a practical necessity in suburban environments. However, this bill prohibits minimum parking standards. This bill prohibits cities from requiring any service, feature, or common property necessitating a homeowners association. Stormwater ponds, private roads, and outdoor recreation space are typically common property in townhome developments, and cities must have the ability to require private maintenance of common property. Thank you, Chair Igo and members, for your time today. We appreciate you continuing to listen to our concerns, and we look forward to continuing to work with the committee on advancing a strong state and local partnership on these issues.
Thank you for testifying. Our next testifier is Brittany Hansey. I believe that is on Zoom, so thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1987, the Minnesota Starter Home Act. My name is Brittany Hennessy, and I'm the Executive Director at Habitat for Humanity, serving Winona County, down here in the southeastern corner of Minnesota. And our organization aims to build hope homes in community, and we build 1 to 2 homes a year, and we complete 30 to 40 home repairs annually. And we're currently one of the only affordable home builders in the city of Winona and most rural communities in this county. And transparently, we rely on innovative housing solutions partnership to use infill methodologies to create new home ownership opportunities. Here in Winona, we face, and the county in general, a severe housing shortage, like much of Minnesota, with 1,460 housing units needed right now in our community. And by 2033, another 610 units on top of that. However, we're very limited in what we can do with the land that we have. On top of that, we face very low vacancy rates. And you're like, why does that matter? Well, our vacancy rate is 1.7%. And when we look at affordable rentals, we are sitting at 0.6%. And ADUs, duplexes, those types of builds would greatly help with that. Outdated zoning codes, large minimum lot size requirements, and restrictions on multifamily development prevent the construction of affordable housing as well. And when I really dig into it, newly constructed single-family homes in Winona County are averaging at $455,000. In fact, our average purchase price of a home went up 60% in this past year. We serve up to 80% AMI. And so it matters what we build, and it matters that we can build dense and creatively and not by any means forego safety and quality, but making sure that we can serve people in a very critical way, providing that stability for families, for individuals, because when we look at who we serve, it's nurses, it is teachers, it is manufacturers, it is police, firefighters, it is the very people who make our community go round, who need a decent place to call home. And so how could this help with Habitat, with building affordably? And it's that the Minnesota Starter Home Act reduces regulatory barriers and incentivizes the development of smaller, more affordable homes, allowing working families to achieve home ownership. Along with streamlining approval processes and decreasing costs and development timelines, statewide land use reform like this would diversify the types of housing that our communities can build, a critical step to achieving a healthy housing continuum, which we all want. And that's why iHabitat supports the full package of Yes to Homes bills being brought forward, including House File 2013, which you have already heard about. And so, nonetheless, this makes a big difference in the work that we do here in Minnesota. So thank you, Chair Igo and Lead Howard, for championing these reforms. And thank you again for the opportunity to testify this afternoon.
Thank you to our testifier. Our next testifier will be live. It's Thomas Elness.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Thomas Elness, and I serve as the State Advocacy Director with AARP Minnesota. On behalf of our more than 620,000 members statewide, we want to thank you for considering House File 1987. AARP Minnesota is proud to be part of a wide-ranging statewide coalition that is committed to addressing the housing concerns here in Minnesota. I appreciated Lead Howard's comments in our press conference the other day saying, you won't see many posters that look like this with all the different organizations that are part of it. So I appreciate the opportunity to be part of that. We recognize the need for more housing and the need for our state government to use the available policy levers to encourage the construction of more housing units to ensure that people of all incomes and ability levels can afford to live in community. This includes encouraging the construction of accessory dwelling units and other missing middle housing, infill housing, and co-housing communities. HF 1987 proposes to increase both housing options for older adults and increase housing supply by allowing more middle housing, meaning housing types between single detached houses and mid to high-rise multifamily apartments and condos. House-sized multi-unit structures can provide a neighborhood with a wider range of housing options at various price points. These housing types fit within and help to generate walkable neighborhoods with community amenities that become an extension of people's homes and serve as shared spaces where neighbors can be together in community. Most importantly, the homes can accommodate people of all ages, physical abilities, and life stages. Lastly, I want to especially thank the bill authors for recognizing the need for the aforementioned accessory dwelling units. In many ways, unpaid family caregivers are the backbone of our long-term care system. Yet our housing policies unnecessarily restrict Minnesotans from having the housing options that they need to care for their loved ones. This bill helps to address that challenge, and we would respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Rayanna Keeley. Thank you, Ms. Lee.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rayanna Lee. I'm the Legislative and Coalitions Director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota. And on behalf of AFP Minnesota and our thousands of activists across the state, I want to express our support for the Minnesota Starter Home Act. One of the number one things that we hear at the doors is the issue of affordability, and that also encompasses housing as well. And last week at the press conference, I heard many of you speaking our language, breaking barriers, empowering people, reducing regulatory burdens, cutting the red tape. I think some of you may find yourselves a little bit more aligned than you may think with AFP. and we believe in listening to those that are closest to the problem, and I think you'll find that in this coalition that we have. Every individual's version of the American dream looks different, as are their paths to achievement, but the one common universal thread is the foundational need to have a stable place to call home. Minnesota, as many testifiers have mentioned, is facing a severe shortage with housing, and home prices are significantly higher than the national average. And we believe that the root of that crisis lies in excessive government intervention, restrictive zoning, land use, building regulations that drive up costs and limit home construction. The Minnesota Starter Home Act offers a meaningful solution by reducing these regulatory barriers, allowing for more housing options. And expanding these options will increase supply, improve affordability, boost economic mobility, and enhance homeowner property rights. We strongly urge lawmakers to please practice restraint when considering any type of mandate that will negate this initiative. We are very excited to see several bills rolling out that seek to alleviate the symptoms of the housing crisis in our state, and actually many of them were listed in the priority booklet that we hand-delivered to each of your offices a few weeks ago. But we urge your support of this bill, and we look forward to helping craft a workable solution that creates more affordable housing for all. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Susan Arntz. We'll be doing it remotely. Susan, can you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, I'm Susan Arntz, and I currently serve as the city manager for the city of Mankato. And I'm here testifying today on behalf of the city and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Affordable housing is a priority for our community. It's our number one priority in Mankato. Several of the committee members have referred that there are communities in Minnesota that are doing good things. We're one of them. We are home to the second largest state university in Minnesota, and as a result, Mankato has worked hard to preserve our middle housing. We currently have rental density restrictions in our single-family neighborhoods around the university, limiting the rental to 25% per block in those areas. This has helped maintain stability and prevent corporate conversions of those units and is critical to preserving affordable owner-occupied housing in Mankato. The proposed changes of this bill may convert some of our existing neighborhoods to rental neighborhoods by adding the ADUs, duplexes, triplexes, and other types of units. They aren't always occupied by owners. We don't require PUDs, another element of the bill, but developers do seek them when they seek code flexibility and security. My purpose of testimony today is there are a number of items that I'd like for you to consider as you continue to debate this bill language. The parking minimum language that's being removed, or that's restricting, by removing parking minimums and relying on developers to provide it on their own, will result in future issues. I have been at city council meetings, both here and in my prior city, where we have residents at the council dais complaining about lack of parking for their guests, for the state licensed group home employees, for senior caregivers, for Meals on Wheels delivery, etc. Developers will long be gone when those issues arise, and in many cases, little can be done to address it by the time they appear. I'm also concerned about the language regarding limiting to one neighborhood meeting. Neighborhood meetings do improve projects. We don't require them, but we encourage them. In every case, when they've taken place, the project is better. Sometimes those meetings take more than one meeting because someone's got to listen and someone's got to make changes. So we need the opportunity to go back and communicate about those changes that are being considered before it ends up in front of the council for consideration. Lastly, I'd ask that you consider removing the administrative appeal or approval requirements. The larger the project, the more likely a non-administrative approval or review should be done. Lastly, I would just say, please don't remove local voices from planning decisions or take community out of the community development. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for testifying. That's it for our testifiers. Now I'd like to open up for public testimony. Anyone here for public testimony? Nope. If not, I would like to actually move on to the A2 amendment. Who would like to move the A2 amendment?
I will, Mr. Chair.
Representative Myers, can you speak on behalf of your amendment, please?
Yeah, so I'd like to move the A2 amendment. Chair Igo and Lead Howard. You know, this is an amendment I know Lead Howard will be familiar with from last session, but this is something that would exempt cities under 10,000. You know, I represent 11 small cities. There's some concerns that I've heard about with this bill, and I know you guys are working on it. We've seen things, you know, change
And I do appreciate that. But, you know, these cities have less resources, smaller staff. They've got concerns with stormwater mitigation, just the stress on infrastructure. And some of my cities, if you've seen my infrastructure bills, are $20-30 million. You know, the limited parking options, the narrow streets in these communities, it's something that, you know, the approach, you know, right now as we see it, isn't maybe going to be successful in every single city. I also know as a, you know, prior, you know, planning chair, city council member, you know, the time and effort that we put into maintaining our comprehensive plans and engaging with the community. And I've also had a recent city do a comp plan amendment 18 months ago. So they've put a lot of time and effort addressing housing. So what I would ask is for members to, you know, support this amendment, which would be an exemption on cities under 10,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Myers. I will, Representative Igo, would you like to speak on that amendment, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the A2 amendment, I would encourage a no vote by the committee. If we start making exemptions for city sizes and start creating a patchwork across our state, it's gonna just create larger problems. And it's actually something we've been hearing as we've been, as Lead Howard and I, as other members of this coalition have been working, we've been hearing from advocates that creating a patchwork is something nobody wants. So I would encourage a no vote from the committee.
Thank you, Representative Igo. I would actually open up to a public. Any comments on the vote? If not, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
No.
No.
Motion fails. The A3 amendment. Who is the A3 amendment?
That'll be me again, Mr. Chair.
Representative Meyer, would you like to move your motion?
Yes, I move the A3 amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Igo, Lead Howard, again, you know, piggybacking off the last amendment, what this does is just allowing a little more time for these communities that, again, smaller cities, lack of staff, resources, you know, that would give them an additional year for enactment date. So it would reach out to January 1st, 2027, and I would support it.
Thank you, Representative Meyer. Representative Igo, Chair Igo, would you like to speak on behalf of your the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the amendment, I'd also encourage a no vote on this one as well. I think that there's some conversations we can have here, but the way it's written right now maybe just isn't the right time to be doing this, but look forward to further conversations with you, Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Igo. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No. Motion fails. Who has the A3 amendment? Representative Meyer, would you like to speak? Would you like to move your A3 amendment? A4 amendment, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, on the A4 amendment, I'm actually going to pull this amendment. You know, I've seen the work that you two have done on this. You know, making sure that, you know, we have those opportunities where we're going to see an impact again in some of our cities. I mean, some of our cities are wanting to ensure that there's an approval process, that they, you know, get their communities involved, and that, you know, some of these requirements, again, can be rather burdensome on them. I know, you know, you had an amendment yourself that addressed some of those things. What I would ask from both of you is just continue to engage what that impact could be on some of these smaller cities. I mean, I've got, oh gosh, a half a dozen cities maybe have 1.5 people in there running the cities, and it can be very burdensome on the impact that it can have and just the costs. Again, you know, we've seen a rise in property taxes and other things. I want to try to, you know, be mindful of that. But at this time, I would pull the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Clarification, you want to pull the amendment. We'll move on to the A5 amendment. Who has the A5 amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair.
For the record, Chair or Representative Johnson, would you like to move your motion?
Yes, please. I'd like to move A5. Is basically a couple changes in the bill. One of them is page 2, deleting page 20, or deleting lines 24 through 26. Reletter the paragraphs in sequence, and the common move is page four, delete 24 through 26, and then line 27, delete I and insert H. The purpose of the amendment is in reference to a testifier we had from Mankato, was remove the about the minimum parking mandate. I was on the planning commission for Cottage Grove. I was also on the city hall or city council, and I saw how important and how vital having parking minimum mandates was in development of either commercial or residential. Without it, we ended up with basically chaos in the streets, people parking wherever they can, and where that becomes a bigger issue is in Minnesota when we have snow. Cottage Grove has a mandate or a rule that you can't park in the streets in the winter so the plows can get through. As streets get narrower and narrower, it becomes more and more of a concern of getting fire trucks through the streets. And if we don't have minimum parking, off-street parking for townhomes or requiring for driveways, those cars are not going to be removed. And I've driven in enough cities where they don't have off-street parking. And what will happen is it will create an issue for public safety, an issue for public works. They will not be able to clear the roads, the streets. And then when they can't clear them, you're going to have a situation where fire trucks are not going to be able to get through the streets to fires. And police and EMS are not going to get to the homes. Cottage Grove has a great reputation of getting to homes quickly. It's one of the top communities that gets there quickly. And I'm concerned not having parking minimums that it will cause more chaos in the streets, parking the streets, and really will affect safety in Cottage Grove. So we need to have that flexibility for our communities to continue. So I hope I ask for a vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Chair Igo, would you like to speak on behalf of the amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also be recommending a no vote on this amendment. When we are talking about parking, you know, one of the things that really contributes to the high costs and why we are having the starter home bill in front of us is when you are mandating these large stall garages that are adding anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000 to the cost of a new home. This is a place for us to find huge savings within partnership with aesthetic mandates. And many of the other things in this bill is how we are going to return to allowing more Minnesotans to afford homes here in Minnesota. So with that, I would have to recommend a no vote and encourage the committee to do a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Lead Howard.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Dotson. To this piece, I just want to speak on as well and would encourage a no vote. And be clear that what we're not saying is that there's not going to be parking. We're just saying that cities can't have these onerous restrictions that lead to excessive parking that isn't grounded in the free market. The reality is, and this is borne out in the statistics, it hasn't been chaos in the streets in municipalities or other states that have addressed these parking requirements, because, you know, a developer isn't going to build housing that doesn't have any parking because no one's going to want to live there. This is an area where the market, for our folks on the other side who really believe in markets, is going to address this issue for us. And just to the piece on that, what the data has shown us on this as a local example, I'm a former city council member myself in the city of Richfield. We'll have to do a contest or comparing our fire departments, because we got a pretty good one, Richfield too, with their response times. But recently in the city of Richfield, with the development, waived their parking requirements because it was requested by the developers. And just that act for that specific property, it wasn't even that large of a property, cut the sort of contribution, if you will, dollar-wise, that the city would have to make in half. And so this offer huge savings to development. Again, I would urge a no vote.
Thank you, Lead Howard. Those all in favor of adopting the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those all opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Motion fails. The A6 amendment, who has the A6 amendment? Representative Johnson, I believe you've got the A6 amendment. Would you like to remove your A6 amendment?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to remove my A6 amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Johnson. Member discussion? Representative Ryer.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I do have one question and then a comment. Quick question based on that last amendment and discussion. Is there anything in this bill that would prevent a city council member from, or a city council from deciding to vote on a street to have no parking allowed on one side of the street? The reason I give is because, for example, we had a very popular Crooked Lake Park and beach were super popular. There ended up being cars on both sides, and we had a little issue with fire trucks, so they decided to make it no parking on one side of the street. Issue resolved. So just wondering if there's anything in the bill that would prevent that.
Representative Eichel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rear, to the way the bill is written, to our understanding, no, there would be.
Okay.
No, if the city wants to do that, they could still be allowed to do that.
Great. Thank you. And then, Chair, just a comment?
Representative.
Great. So cities, we've heard testimony today that from representatives of cities that say what they are doing is working, and except I would say that it is not working. Statewide, the availability of homes continues to drop. Median income for homeowners has increased 2% over the last 5 years, while the cost of new homes at the median level have increased 19%. So it's just becoming increasingly unaffordable. So what is happening and the changes that are taking place have not been enough. In Coon Rapids, we're very proud of a development we have. It goes from Highway 10 up to Northdale Boulevard. We have this huge development of Ramblers. They're single-level homes with a basement, and they are called Orrin Thompson Homes, and they were built in the 1950s. And because of this, we are one of the most affordable suburbs in the metro area. But the problem is this type of development and affordable developments aren't happening today. What's really, really great, Coon Rapids and Thompson's building boom are actually featured in an exhibit called Suburbia, Land of 10,000 Dreams at the Minnesota History Center. And it's an exhibit about the birth of suburbia. We need an all hands on deck approach, and I think this bill is one piece to that. We have to think about the next generation of people who want to buy homes. And I want to say thank you to our testifier, Thomas Elness, for reminding us it's not just the next generation, but it's also our seniors who need a place to move into when they want to downsize or they're not able to take care of their lawn, etc. When door knocking, I came across many folks who had either their child still living at home that was in their 20s, 30s, sometimes even 40s, because they were unable to buy a home. I also had many people who had their older parents living with them. So we need to ensure the next generation can have the opportunity for the American dream like they had in the 50s with the building of those Orrin Thompson Homes in the Land of 10,000 Dreams. So thank you for this bill, and I would urge a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Ray Rower. Next member, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, I think, for Mr. Erickson from Housing First. A couple of comments that were made, and I wanted to clarify that with the Builders Association representative. So, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Erickson, we had heard, I think from Mr. Vogel, that there that builders were not installing appropriate infrastructure into some of these new neighborhoods and that we were going to be creating an infrastructural desert or something along those lines. My question for you on this line is, has there ever been a builder that you know of that did not appropriately size all the requirements for infrastructure that were going to be going into the development that they were building?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, it's a great question. In terms of what's going into the development, our members are required to comply with the engineering specifications of municipalities. In fact, many would argue that these are overly onerous requirements, and I think something that's definitely worth looking into with this committee going forward. It's just, how much are we oversizing, how much are we overbuilding, over-engineering? Now, the off-site is always open to interpretation. State law prohibits direct off-site infrastructure improvements unless directly authorized by the state of Minnesota. Several cities have attempted to charge unauthorized fees. Those have ended in court cases where they're not allowed to do that. So when it's appropriate, yes, infrastructure is installed to the specifications of the municipality. Probably the best way to answer it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up to that, so don't go far. Some of the criticism around the infill situations were, and we dealt with this last year as we were dealing this, if infill housing is being built, it's only going to be allowed to be sized to the amount of infrastructural capacity that's there in place. So if you could confirm that, if you would.
Mr. Erickson, just so you know, the clock is ticking, so we've got about 20 minutes left, so we'll have to move this along fairly quick. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash. The question again, the timing comment threw me for a second.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Mr. Erickson, the question was, or the comment was made that with infill housing, that it was going to similarly create a problem in that area. But as I remember from conversations during last year's bill attempts, that we heard very clearly that infill housing was only going to be allowed to be as large as the capacity of the infrastructure that was in place in that infill neighborhood. Can you confirm that for us, please?
Yes, I can. So if you look at infrastructure capacity, like where we're sitting right now in St. Paul is a great example. Families are not as large as they were before. Our toilets are vastly more efficient than they were 100 years ago. So in a lot of our older established neighborhoods, we're probably at an overcapacity relative to what we were before. Also, it's important to remember that this is not going to be past any of these bills and then poof, 3 million homes arrive and overwhelms infrastructure. That's not how the world works. It's the parade of what-if scenarios that are used to attack these bills are frankly overstated. The infrastructure concerns, even on infill and greenfield development, are not really applicable.
Lead Howard, I see you've got a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Dossett and Representative. I just wanted, just because I think this infrastructure piece is critical, I want to actually read what's in the bill for the committee. And it says, a development authorized in this bill must comply with any standards, performance conditions, or requirements, including the adequacy of existing public infrastructure imposed by a city to protect public health, safety, and general welfare. And I want to read the next section, too, because it's also about public infrastructure. Nothing in this section authorizes residential development that is prohibited by state, federal law, or rule, or is prohibited under any ordinance adopted pursuant to a state or federal law or rule that protects federal floodplains, areas of critical or historical concern, wild and scenic rivers, shoreland, or otherwise restrict residential units to protect and preserve public health, the environment, or scenic areas. These are pretty, we work closely and listen to the cities with this, and so given some of the testimony about infrastructure concerns, I appreciate the question. I think it just merit reading what's in the bill.
Thank you, Lead Howard. Representative Nash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief. Representative Howard really knows how to steal a guy's ending. That's where I was headed next.
Yes, sir.
But, yeah, members, the concerns, from my estimation, are sort of based in fear-mongering around what this bill does. The bill very clearly addresses the infrastructural issues very clearly, very strongly. So I have other questions, but I'll in the interest of time, I'll won't. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dash. Representative Abadji, please.
Thank you, Chair. And, of course, thank you to both Chair Igo and Lead Howard. This is a bill that's been a long time coming. I know so many people have worked on this, so I really appreciate your efforts. One of the things I want to highlight about this bill, in addition to Representative Nash's comments about, this is not something that will overtake anything that has already been happening, right? But one of the things that I think this bill is also going to do is remove that stain of exclusionary zoning that I think that we've had not only in the state of Minnesota, but throughout this entire country, right? And so Minnesota here has an opportunity to be a leader to ensure that more communities across our state who have been looking for that opportunity for home ownership can now finally have it, right? I think, Representative Igo, you talked earlier that this allows for anyone in Minnesota that wants that home ownership opportunity to be able to get it, because we can have cheaper homes, we can have smaller homes, we can fit what the families in Minnesota look like. And I think, you know, folks come from all types of backgrounds. You know, I have worked really hard on ensuring that we're kind of closing our racial home ownership disparity gap. You know, that's also going to take a lot of effort, but I think this is something that can kind of get there to ensure that we're opening up access to everyone, that we're not using arbitrary rules to tell certain folks that they're not welcome in certain places in Minnesota. So I appreciate you guys for working on this, working really hard. I know there's a number of stakeholders. You know, I would just say that I hope, as much as you guys are listening, I hope that they're listening too, that they understand that the way business as usual has been working has actually been putting us further along this path of division and discrimination. And I'm hopeful that something like this can start to bring us closer together again. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Abadji. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. Would this bill reflect the or take away the ability for cities or communities to, like in Cottage Grove, if you're going in with a new development, you have to have so much open space and actually create a park for that community? It requires cash in lieu of a park so that park can be built somewhere else. Would that take the ability of the cities away from them to do that?
Chair Eichel.
Mr. Chair, I think we'll have one of our testifiers come up here and help just answer that one, just to kind of make sure we get that right from Housing First here. But
thank you, Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, nothing addresses or changes existing state law as it comes to authorized infrastructure dedications and requirements such as parks, but it does not give any blanket authority or approval for the state, according to my reading, to go above and beyond that. All exactions must still follow the United States Constitution protections on regulatory takings. So it has to be, have to have an essential nexus, a connection to the purpose, and it has to be proportional to the impact. So as long as it falls under the scope of the United States Constitution, regulatory taking requirements and state law, it'd be fine.
Representative Johnson.
So what you're saying, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to confirm that the city, like example, the city of Cottage Grove, if they currently require a park to be built in a development, basically creating a community within a community so neighbors get together at that park, is if they currently require it, they're still going to be able to continue to require that of the development.
Mr. Erickson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as long as it does comply with the constitutionally protected requirements and regulatory takings, yes, it has to. They can't demand 50-60% of the development for parkland, but it has to be proportionate to the impact, and there has to be a need. So as long as it does still, state law even authorize impact fees does not, or takings does not exempt states from, or cities from the Constitution when it comes to takings. In fact, just last year, the nine United States Supreme Court justices who can agree on nothing agreed that when it comes to development, they even if it's on an ordinance adopted by a city, it still has to follow the takings clause of the United States Constitution.
Representative Johnson. Any other member comments? Hearing that, Representative Igo, Chair Eichel or Representative Howard, would you like Chair to final comments?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Dothis. Thank you all members of the committee and everyone who testified. And I think we had a really good discussion today about a really important bill that centers Minnesotans who are seeking the American dream. So if members of this committee think that Minnesotans should have more power to find a home that they can own and have a path to the American dream, I'd urge a yes vote. If you think governments ought to have more power to restrict Minnesotans from seeking the American dream, then vote no. But this bill puts us on a path that I think what we're hearing from Minnesotans all across the state want us to take. And then just the last thing I want to mention is to what Representative Igbaje mentioned about the mutual listening that needs to continue to occur on this bill. That's really important. We've been having regular meetings with stakeholders to continue doing that. There's important work that continues, but this committee is an important and great first step, and we look forward to moving this forward.
Thank you, Lead Howard. Chair Igel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to start saying thank you to you, Lead Howard. You know, it's been an opportunity, great opportunity to work with you on this, and I think it's a rare opportunity that hopefully we can bring back more, seeing, you know, hearings like this where you have two members working together on bills like this. And thank you to all the members here today for a great discussion. Thank you to the testifiers. Thank you to the coalitions who are representing multiple industries and groups, either whether you're opposed, whether you're against. These are the conversations we need to have to make a change and make a difference. This is the Minnesota Starter Home Act, and it's something that we can get back to and to have. I really want to reiterate that comment that this isn't just for the next generation. This is for every generation of Minnesotans now and in the future. This is an issue that, you know, when I was first elected, I continue to hear about. Whether I'm knocking on a door or whether I'm not, or whether I haven't talked to someone in over a decade, I might get a Facebook message and say, hey, Spence, been a while. What are you guys doing about housing? I can't find a house. But those are real things that I hear from, like I said, friends, peers, and colleagues. You know, and this is so core to so much of what we believe in as Minnesotans and Americans. You know, when it, you know, there's people, I made a comment a few weeks back at a housing event, and I said, you know, with the median age of buying your own home being at 38 years old, you know, we wonder why people are waiting longer and longer to start families. We want to get back to people being able to make those choices and make those plans for their lives. They can't do that if they don't have a stable home life. So, yes, some of these things in this bill, you can say here, and yes, it does sound scary. It does sound tough. But there is something that I think that all of us, you know, something that I try to live my life by is that the obstacle is the way. The obstacle right now in front of us is to make change. It's to do something that is hard. It's to do something that is challenging the status quo. But I tell you what, I think most times in life when you choose that obstacle way, and we as legislators, we as community, we as Minnesotans are saying, we're going to do this, I think we're going to be rewarded with dividends. I think we're going to make a difference. I think we're going to see more homes. I think we're going to have more affordability for those families. We are going to have diverse options. We're going to have affordable options, and we are going to return stability to our housing market and to the Minnesotan family. And that is something we can do together if we open our minds, listen to each other, and take a stance and move back to something that will make a difference. Because it isn't something new. It's worked in the past. It's going to work now, and it's working in states around us. So with that, I encourage the committee's vote, and thank you again to everyone for the testimony and conversation today.
Thank you, Chair Igel. Once again, I renew my motion for House File 1987 to be referred to Elections, Finance, and Government as amended, and Government Operations as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Aye. Motion carries. Next week, our members are planned to meet on Wednesday, March 12, 2025. I'd like to thank members and nonpartisan staff for being here today, and the meeting is now adjourned.